Hello and welcome to another episode of Moon Talk Radio. It's Gray Dale Martez Harris. The date is Thursday, February 24th, 2022. I was born on a Thursday, and I have a Sagittarius South Node. My mother is a Sagittarius. So I literally came from the portal of Sagittarius. Thursdays always seem like the luckiest day of the week for me a lot of the times. Even though it's a very busy day because Jupiter expands everything that it touches. And Jupiter is the ruler of Sagittarius. It's not 10, it's 100, it's 1,000, it's 10,000, it's 100,000, it's 1,000,000, it's 1,000,000,000,000. That's very Jupiterian. Today's episode is going to be a little bit different than some of the others. The title of today's episode is God is Not a Secret. And I'll be hinting at the idea of the fifth element and how it's exemplified in our society and in our own lives. If you think about the fifth element, the movie itself, I know a lot of people have probably seen that with Bruce Willis and Mina Savari. At the end of the movie, I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but you know, in the middle of the movie, they have the opera singer that's blue and she's singing the song, and then she gets shot, and then Bruce Willis is like, "Where are the stones at?" And she says, "They're in me." And she was hinting at the idea that these physical stones that he was looking for, that were representing the elements and the seasons and the four directions, north, south, east, and west, were inside of her. And he literally had to go inside of her belly and dig out all these huge stones, which was crazy because you wouldn't think that they could fit inside her body, but they were there. And then at the end of the movie, they're trying to figure out how to make these stones work. And they get very frustrated. And the stones are all in the places that they need to be. And then one of the people, like the priest or something, blows. He just exhales, like frustrated. He's like, "Oh." And he exhales, and it causes the stone to activate because one of the elements is wind. And so when his breath blows over the stone, it causes the element of wind to be activated. And from there, they figure out that every one of the stones needs to have a manifestation, a physical manifestation of its element. So they put dirt on the earth one, and, you know, they have to put sweat, they squeeze it, the water, and it falls out, and water is on one of them, and then, you know, they have to get a match, and they light the match for fire. But it had already been prophesied that the fifth element, which was the woman who was guardian, and who was created and exemplified in the movie, needed Bruce Willis in order for the whole manifestation to be fulfilled, or the prophecy to be fulfilled. And by that, they were hinting at the idea of love and how God is love. God is spirit. And love is an exemplification of God at all times. Loving yourself, loving your children or your mother or your father, loving your dog enough to feed it and take it on a walk, loving your plants enough to water them and continue watering them and nurturing them. Love itself is the element that is personifying God. The idea that you are more than just your body. That like the Power Rangers, your body is a Zord, be it a pterodactyl or triceratops or T-Rex or something. And you are this conscious entity inside of you. And that everything that is you is coming from this will or spirit inside of yourself. Just like in the elements, spirit is personified through fire a lot of the times. And then you have that which is lava. Then you have the crust of the earth, which is earth. Then you have the wind that cooled down the crust of the earth, which is air. And then those gases go into the air and they create condensation. And then it rains, and then that's water. And that's kind of like the cycle of life, the four elements. But without the fifth element, none of those things work. Perfect example. Your body is made up of all of the elements, yes? You have the spirit or the will of yourself, which is kind of like your attitude or, you know, the ability to want something, to feel angry, to feel happy. You know, when you feel that burn in your chest or you feel the knot in the back of your throat when you feel like you want to cry. That's the idea of spirit. The idea that you want to fight somebody, hug somebody. And then you have earth, which is your body. And then you have air, which is your respiratory system and your central nervous system. And then you have water, which is your blood and the fluids inside of you. But none of those things can function without spirit. Say you're laying down and your body tells you that you have to go to the bathroom and pee. If it was not for the spirit inside of you, that causes your body to get up and walk to the bathroom and pee, you would lay there in bed and pee on yourself. So it's this idea that everything you do is connected to a deeper understanding of yourself. There is a collective consciousness that is us. And everything is exemplified in that over and over again. Matter and mass, atom, protons, neurons, all of those things, cells in your body are just like you to the earth. The earth is a body and you are a cell on the earth. Are you a white blood cell, a red blood cell, an enzyme, a skin cell, a brain cell? Are you a cell in your eye? Are you a cell in your kneecap? And all of the body is aware when the body is experiencing love and pain and all of these emotions, even if it's localized. If your hand is hurting, your foot knows that your hand is hurting. There is a message coming from your brain that travels to your hand and back up to your brain to tell your hand that it is hurting. And all of those things are connected together. I listen to people often talk about how science is in contradiction with God. But science does not contradict God at all. It's just that our brains are so small. We're only using 10% of our brain at a time. I think God loves science. I think he finds it amusing. When you talk about the big boom, I don't think anything of the big boom contradicts God. When you talk about evolution, I don't think anything about evolution contradicts God. I think that it is beyond our comprehension. And that I've been reading this book, which is a very, very beautiful and fascinating book that you might want to look into reading yourself, about the saints. And it's called The Saints, and it's by Robert M. Place, An Agnostic Book of Saints. It's a very informative book. And they talk about how it's a natural desire for not just us as human beings, but for any being to yearn to become one again with something that's greater than itself. It's almost like the idea of being a child and coming home from school with a good grade and wanting to tell your mom and dad. Or on a grander scale, the idea of death. Your body eventually is tired of living. It doesn't have anything to do with your experiences. It gets older and older and older, and it's depleted naturally, exhausted, and eventually death will take you, just like sleep will take you. You can try to fight sleeping, and after you get done fighting it and fighting it and fighting it, it will take itself. It will take what is needed, and you will be exhausted and you will pass out. So if you don't think about what your needs are, you will end up in a situation where it's not good, like falling asleep at the wheel. Well, you've been avoiding sleep for 72 hours and now you're driving your car and you're about to pass out while driving the car. And then it's becoming something dangerous for you. Why? Because you're ignoring the natural balance and order of things. In the book, it talks about a quinix, Q-U-I-N-C-U-N-X. You can look it up. And it's talking about a symbol throughout history that is exemplifying four points with a fifth point in the middle that usually is empowering those four points, like the four seasons, the four cardinal signs, the four directions. Like a dice with the number five, right? And the point in the middle. Or like a pyramid with the square as a base leading up to a point at the top, like a mountain. Or like a cross where it crosses and you think of like the Christ or something symbolic in the middle, like the world card. Number 21 of the tarot, where you have the fixed elements of the bull, the ego, the man. What is it? The bull, the ego, eagle, the man. And what is it? Is it the scorpion? What am I missing there? The lion. There we go. Thank you, God. those 4 points. And then in the middle of that is the World card, which is a woman balancing the masculine and the feminine. And there's a sash going across her genitalia, which is hiding the penis, which is hinting at the idea of the balance of masculine and feminine in the physical realm. Anima mundi, the world soul. And I was hinting at being a sail to the world because it's talking about the idea of a collective consciousness. Since COVID 2020, 0110110, the God number 1111220 portal, everything is a circle, everything is a circle. A square is a circle, a triangle is a circle, a rectangle is a circle. You're a circle, I'm a circle. Your guitar is a circle, your computer is a circle. The frame is a circle, the lamp is a circle. The magazine is a circle. The skillet is a circle. The washing machine is a circle. Your shoe is a circle. Right? We also work off of circles in our lives. We circle to work. We circle back home. We circle to church on Sundays. We circle back home. We circle to meet mom or dad maybe once a month or once every week or once every other week or once a year on the holidays. And we circle back. There are bigger circles and then there are little circles. But the point in our life is circles. We circle around to picking up the phone to call somebody and then not picking up the phone and then calling them again when we need them. Our whole life is an exemplification of circles, just like we have planets that are close to us, interpersonal planets, like the sun, the moon, in astrology are considered planets. And then you have Mercury and Venus. And then you have the outer planets, like social planets, like Jupiter, Neptune, Saturn, Pluto. Those planets affect people more generationally. If you hear a sound in the background, it's my gas heater. I'm a New Yorker, so if you hear this sound, it's because it's my heater and it's keeping me warm. It's February. But this idea of things circling around, coming back around to you, is a natural part of life. It's a natural part of our existence to understand things. You're a freshman, you're a sophomore, you're a senior, you're a freshman, you're a sophomore, you're a junior, you're a senior. Then you're a freshman again and a sophomore and a junior and senior in college. Then maybe you go get your master's. You're a freshman again, right? And then you go into the workforce. You're a freshman again. And so that's almost hinting at the court cards, which are the pages, the knights, the queens, and the kings, which is also this idea of where is it that you're learning something new and you're an apprentice? Where is it that you're serving your emotions? Because that's what the knight does, serves the queen. And what is intimidating you within those emotions, the mission? Where is it that things are emotional for you, where your emotional conflicts are potentially or existing in it? And then the king is hinting at where you feel fixed in your life, where disruptions literally might have to happen in order for you to get or overcome something. Because what king do you know that just stands down from their kingdom? Most of them are captured or slaughtered. So it's the idea that there's a steadfast, fixed nature of the king. And all of these things, I use the tarot, I use history, and I use the courts and all of this because it's exemplified in our lives over and over and over again, because history repeats itself, because we live in a realm of these circles. So even this idea of the cross, Christ was a symbol of something sacred in the middle. Just like in the pyramids, you had the four points at the bottom and you build it all the way up to the point of opening your eye up. A lot of the times there's an eye at the top, which is talking about enlightenment. Because what happens at the top of a mountain? After you've trekked up the mountain, be it straight up the mountain, on a diagonal, or all around it, you have a view. You have a view. You're at the top of a mountain, and now you can look out and see more than you did before. You can see other mountains or other landscapes. You can also see where you came from. Maybe you only came up one side of the mountain, but now you can see all three other sides of the mountain because you can look down at it. Maybe you're happy on your mountain, or you realize just because you went up a mountain that you don't want to be on that mountain. You want this mountain over there. The only reason you know that there's a mountain over there is because you went up one. When you're at the bottom of a mountain, you cannot see the other side. So a lot of the times there's a spiritual guru, a monk, a floating turtle, a master kung fu, Kill Bill person or something, a kung fu panda. You know, there's something at the top of the mountain a lot of the time symbolizing spiritual awakening. A gnosis or an enlightenment, gnosis, G-N-O-S-I-S, enlightenment, because that person is mastering something. It's the idea of Capricorn and Aquarius, right? Capricorn is mastering the earth, which is why Capricorn rules politics. But Aquarius has the vantage, which is the eagle eye view. They might have the mastery because they mastered it, or they might have the mastery because they invented it, or karmically someone in their family mastered it or invented it. So they just have an advantage because of that. So it's an understanding of being able to see more than other people. Which is why Aquarius rules pharmaceuticals, antibiotics, and the future. Fixed air. Which technically, we are already in fixed air. But we don't think about being in fixed air because of our Taurus placement. Taurus is the earth. And most people don't stop and think that the earth is a spaceship that was given to you. Because you're on it. You're on it. So you never stop to think about what's outside of it. Because Taurus is talking about what you're comfortable with. What's comfortable. Like there are still people that believe that the earth is flat. Even though if we all sit by the water, we all see that boat slowly dissolving over the horizon instead of just going and dropping off. But there are people who will believe that the earth is flat because it appears to be flat. And that's why Aquarius is hinting at a supreme enlightenment, a universal understanding. I have an Aquarius midhaven with Jupiter in Capricorn in the seventh house. So there's this, Aquarius rules my ninth house and my 10th house, but Aquarius is the ruler of the 11th house. So there's this hinting at ahead of your time kind of content, kind of thing. So I feel when I'm doing moon talk a lot of the times, it's a universal love inside of me. That drives me to enlighten people because I want you to be happier, to feel freer, because I'm happy and I'm free. And just testimonially, my life has not been sweet and easy, but I have made it sweet and easy from my love of self and my love of God and my love of the people I chose to love in my life and chose to love me, of valuing their worth, of valuing myself. That is why life becomes beautiful, not because of how much I possess or how many people I possess. I wanted to start this podcast with a poem about my transition, but it's taken me like 25 minutes to get to the poem. There are two poems that I'm going to share with you, and that's why I started with this podcast is going to be a little bit different than the other ones. But I had to work through all of those explanations within spirit in order to get to the place of opening you up to my own personal experiences. This is a little bit longer of a poem. So if you need to, go ahead and shift your consciousness to a more artistic element of things and not a I told you so kind of aspect. Art is the center of our being. Through art, we keep history like cavemen chiseling on walls. I have a degree in contemporary dance, which is a performing art, but I also had a mentor, Florence Kendall, for 11, 12, 13 years now that has been tutoring me in visual arts. So I also paint and sketch and do things. I have a Cancer moon, so it's not in a rigorous way, it's in a way that when I can open up to spirit, I allow it to free flow. And I've always been a writer, Mercury and Virgo. So, like I said before, Moon Talk Radio is about transitions. It's not just about me transitioning in my gender, because in actuality, I'm two-spirited and I've always been this person. I've always had a feminine spirit. I've always had the spirit of a woman. I was raised by women, and the emotional intelligence of a woman is how I have always lived my life. But I mastered the vessel that I was inside of, which is a cis male vessel. And now, through the dawning of Aquarius, I can have that balance that I have always longed for in my hormones, because it's not black and white, it's gray, and there's a spectrum. And really, there has always been a spectrum, but because of our programming, we have gotten away from it. It's like the idea of me muscling around for 15 or 16 years in New York City and still being so much a femme boy to so many people. I was a fitness instructor, hit Pilates at Ripley Greer, and I work for Chase Fitness Group Pilates, and I'm a dancer, and I've been on my yoga mat almost every other day since COVID. And so there's a lot of grrr, and what you would think a lot of testosterone building inside of me. But in actuality, because I am naturally this being, it is not so. It's not manifested as so. So for me, it's like a healing. Just like during the Greek mythology era, some of you would be condemned to a cave just because you had scoliosis or humpback, or you were born with six fingers and they didn't cut the extra two off, or you were bipolar so you heard voices and they didn't have medication for you, or you were borderline personality. All of these things are the dawning of Aquarius. Being able to take this pill, even being able to take something as simple as aspirin or cough syrup to help you with the flu. The flu was a fatal thing. It was a fatal virus for many people for a very long time. But now, because of the dawning of Aquarius, it's different. It's not like popping Tic Tacs doing what I'm doing in my life. It's very challenging and it's very spiritual. And if you've been listening to the podcast, you can see it consciously inside of me, my mind, the way that my voice is working and speaking, the care that I have in my articulation of self, the aggression within my will. All of those things are being proven and exemplified, which is why I thought the podcast was so important, so that society could learn from my experiences and from my suffrage, because there are many people out there that have made my life very, very, very difficult, especially living in New York City. But through those difficult experiences, I have overcome, and many people have learned something. This poem about my transition is hinting at the idea that we always transition in things. We transition from one relationship to another relationship. We transition from single to getting married. You transition from being yourself to being a parent. You transition from high school to college. You transition from your house to your car to your job, back to your car, back to your house. Transportation, transition, transformation, trans, moving. So, a lot of people, are having that hard understanding that I naturally am this and I am shedding myself. That's literally all it feels like to me personally. I don't feel like I'm taking on anything extra. I don't feel like I'm trying to be a woman. That's why a lot of the times I use trans woman before, so that I don't offend women, because I understand that our experience is the same but different. It's a different experience, but it's also the same. There are many things in my life that I went through that are just as equivalent to any cis woman. But I didn't have any rights around it, and I didn't have a voice. Boys have always liked me. That's why I put on gay. I was like, oh, I'll just put on gay then, and I'll just live in queer, the queerdom of it, and then I don't have to worry about explaining myself to people. But in actuality, I wasn't explaining myself to myself even. So when I found myself in situations where boys were taking advantage of me, or teachers were sexually assaulting me, or, men were not respecting me in the workforce, even though I did a whole bunch of more things than them. A lot of men wanted me to be this masculine character, because if I'm a woman, quote unquote, and I'm able to do all these physical things in the world, they start feeling inadequate within themselves as a man. But it's just a Lilith and Eve concept. Every woman has Lilith and Eve inside of her. Eve submits to her man. Okay, honey, yeah, I know one of us has to stay home, okay, to take care of the kids. I guess I'll stay home and raise the kids then, and you go out and you do those things, and it's a family, it's a chariot. Or maybe she's not married at all. And she's a CEO of a business and she has tons of money. And it's like a construction business. And she comes in with her pencil skirt and she tells all the men at the construction site, this is the policies and the procedures that the president of the company have told me. And maybe the men don't like being told that by a woman. But the point is, she has authority over them. She has more knowledge, know-how than they do in the aspects of things. That's why she has her job. Maybe she was a construction worker at another site, or maybe her father had a construction company and she was raised watching him do it, so she could excel at the company. You can't judge a book by its cover. The title of this is Phantom Kisses. It was something of a hot day, but my heart played it cool. She was always something to protect and hide. Wouldn't you, if she was yours? I was yours. I was she. Me. How dare I do such a thing? Close my palace chambers to your iron will. The length of your stay, I pled for change. This is it, I thought. What a disgrace. Think of the most disappointing moment of your life. Give it a big hug and tuck it into bed with you at night. I've never been so tired of everything that's not mine. Phantom kisses. There was a cliff, and I dreamed of falling off it. Some piece of me that was still me loved her courage. In order to create balance, I had to get away and stay away. The blessing was the realization that I didn't need you anymore, or it. Dot, dot, dot. New York. I remember holding on to the fear that nothing could be greater. Love showed me differently. And now, nothingness. Sweet, sweet nothingness. There was a place in me where things mattered, where you mattered. Life is more content without you, but I miss the complexity of our affinity. I clenched my green obsidian and cried like a young girl. The flow, taking me beyond myself and this realm of existence. We have nothing. So what is there to be upset about? Nothing begets nothing. The universal void encompassing all will and all doubt. It took me a while to realize I was just creating the same scenario in my life. Duplicates of a male archetype that left me feeling uninhabited, alien to my own desires. The city that always inspired me, now just a dried-up vessel, a landmine of regret and bad choices. The benefactor being I found myself, even if I lost everyone else. The dance was slow at first, but quickly picked up in tempo. I placed myself down with such care as not to disrupt the flux of my own destiny. A destiny without you in it. I awake and feel such a magnetic pull. The moon is dominating. How strange I surrendered to her will, for it is my own. The care I took, diminishing into the silence of the past. It's September 11th. And Battery Park plays her role in the dissolution of my ego. I love the soul lost on today. Perhaps her grace is a piece of me. I long to suffer silently. Some part of it truly pleases me. A manifestation of the pain is not always in order, but when it is, I find the lack of intake is the most soothing part. What of it? No big surprise, most things hold very little fascination these days. My will bobbing in the currents of the wind like the colorful sailboats I see resting in the harbor. The water is romantically dark, vampiric even. The nothingness is back. It has returned for me, like the shadows of a prince that once was, a prince that can only meet at night. Midnight makes me think of you. And there in our private place, while everyone is asleep, you hold me. The dream is always the same. I awake to the stain of reality, to the sting and discomfort of the knowing. Jupiter, how could you have nothing to offer me? Was I not worthy? He showed me love. Now that I have tasted its glory, everything is sour, is salt. The birds share their song. I know it well. They dress me when I cannot dress myself. The rodents scurry away, but not before noticing what I have to offer. Cheese. Music plays for us. It's the sound of a disrupted youth. It's the cries of the unheard. The ignorant find it amusing, and there is a certain satisfaction in viewing their lack of awareness, their lack of shame. I would guess the feeling is mutual. The plutonic reality of our Aquarian forecast. You told me the weather's changing. I still wear the cloak you gave me. It becomes a blanket to hide me, like a delicate scorpion awaiting its victim. After such a long trial in the desert, it doesn't want to miss its chance to strike. I let the venom do what it does, breaking me down. The trees of the forest expand and create a wall, blocking out all light. It makes me tired, more tired than usual. A deep, blissful sleep takes over me. Phantom Kisses. I hope that was insightful and stimulated thought within you. Sometimes when we're hearing things, we're not listening. I say that again because it's easy to miss. Sometimes when we're hearing things, we're not listening. Hearing something is like when things just come into you, like sound waves hitting you, or water waves running into you, or gamma rays or infrared rays, they just are coming. But listening is something that is active. To hear is something that it is almost like existing. You just are. But to listen is more attached to your will. When God gave me the epiphany of what I was doing to myself, it was 2020 and Trump was in office and I was living in Washington Heights with, you know, boys that I care very much about, and I was in a comfortable place as far as physically. But it was COVID, and so none of New York was really working. They were giving us so much information. We were all terrified. A lot of us don't remember that time, but we were afraid to. I remember being afraid to go outside and jog even. And I'm naturally active. I was teaching at Ripley Greer at the time, but even if I wasn't teaching the HIIT classes and I wasn't doing the active thing, I naturally do something physical after a couple of days. If it's running, if it's, you know, at the time I was going to the gym, or, you know, if it's just putting on some loud music and moving the furniture and sweating. So to be in such a confined space was a very torturesome experience for me in the beginning. And luckily, I had a yoga mat, and I had taken yoga for years off and on, maybe once or twice a month here or there, scattered throughout, maybe 10 times a year or something like that. But it became 4 to 5 times a week for a while. Now it's probably like 3 times a week, 2, 3 times a week. But it was like 4 or 5 times a week because I just needed it. I needed to physically exert myself. I wasn't in a relationship. I wasn't having sex. I was afraid to run around, you know? So there were a lot of, like my body was suffering from not being able to exhaust itself even. And I had a dream. It was June 21st of 2020. And I know that it was like June 21st of 2020 or around that date because it was an eclipse in the heavens when it happened. And I have a Cancer moon, which is domicile. Cancer rules the moon. And I have a Leo sun, which is domicile. Leo rules the sun. And so they eclipsed each other. And I had a dream that I had a baby, and the baby was me. And I woke up, and my ex, who's a dear friend of mine, who I fell in love with and moved to California, and a lot of this poem, Phantom Kisses, is about, called me. And I just cried to them, to her, Carmen. At the time, she was in the role of cis male as well. And I said, I had a baby, and the baby is me. And on the other line, she said, and isn't she beautiful? And we both just sat there and cried on the phone together. And from that moment forward, I knew that I was going to do what it took to be myself. The news was literally saying Black lives don't matter, trans lives don't matter. Pride was canceled at the time. I was stuck in an apartment. I couldn't run around. I couldn't exhaust myself. I couldn't hide within my jobs. There was no hiding myself at all. Everything was deal with the choices you made, deal with the choices you made. It's look at this programming. You're Native American, African American, and you behave this way because you were taught to behave this way, not because this is who you are. I used to always have these dreams that I was a powerful woman, like Xena, Warrior Princess, or She-Ra by the power of Grayskull, or Wonder Woman, because I came from women and my mom was a single mom and she was in the role of a male. She went to work all the time and came home exhausted. I would massage her muscles and I would cook her meals and I would watch her breathing. I would literally watch her breathing with her mouth open because she was exhausted. And I would be so afraid that she was going to die as a child, which is kind of like morbid, but at the same time, it was just very cancerous of me, you know, worrying if mom's gonna make it, worrying if she can pay the bills. It's not really something that a child should be thinking of at all. But those things prepared me to work a little bit harder and to care a little bit more than other children at that time. My babysitter and my cousin, Megan Love Walker, had been murdered at a party. She was 14 and she was shot in the head because they opened fire and the bullet ricocheted and went through her forehead. And it was my first open casket that I had to go to at 8 years old. So the idea of death and loss, and it wasn't like just some family member over there, right? She was only 14 as my babysitter. So she was the type of person that I had a relationship with, maybe helped me with my homework and stuff, talked to me about whether I could go out and play or not. You know, so this idea of loss was a major part of my existence. And I wanted to share all of that with you because I wanted you to see more than me in this transition that I'm experiencing. It's an awareness of society. I'm going to end this podcast with my forgiveness letter. Diane Caruso, who is a psychiatrist at Duke University, who works with patients like me, is one of my best friends and dearest friends' mother. And months ago, she told me that I should write a forgiveness letter. And I was like, I don't want to write no forgiveness letter, going through all of these hormonal understandings. And it took me months to get to the place, like January. I think she told me in November or October. Took me till like January, December to write it. And it was so freeing to write it and to finally go back a month later and read it a couple of days ago. And I'm going to end the podcast with it. It's in two sections about my blackness. Dear society, I want to take this time to express my forgiveness of you. Yes, of you. Forgiveness for your passive behavior against racism, as if since it's not happening to you, then it's not happening. Forgiveness for pinched eyebrows and cutting eyes. Forgiveness for judging expressions and timidly bitter insults. Forgiveness for the space I decided to hold next to you. Forgiveness for the manner in which I talk, walk, and relate my being, this beautiful black being, this beautiful dark essence, like a fading sunset glowing underneath. What drives you to the boundaries you set for me? What drives the cruel undercurrents of your psyche to control me? And like a snake in the grass, you form a hidden agenda to destroy me. I forgive you. I forgive you because I must to live about my two-spirited nature. Dear society, forgiveness starts with the self. So I have learned. I have found me. But really, I was never lost. Just sleeping, wide awake. I forgive you. I pray you find the strength to truly love, to surrender to it at least once in your life. I forgive you for telling me to hide. I forgive you for encouraging me to swallow myself, to ever so subtly sit to the back of the bus, order from the back of the restaurant, and not even bother to voice up on corporate concerns for obvious rejection. I forgive you for teaching America's younger generations to hate me, to be ignorant to the land they live in, grow and benefit from my land. I forgive the lack of intelligence around the considerations of core people and principles that give these people the proper means to survive in my land. And mostly, I forgive the silent stander by, the one in the neighborhood that has allowed this to continue, the ones that have watched me suffer and starve and fight and push and sweat and exist day after day after day. I forgive you. Thank you for listening to Moondog Radio. If you have any questions, you can email me at radiomoontalk@gmail.com. Happy Black History Month. And this is Graydale Mortez Harris, signing off.